So I'm going to tell you a little bit about our public health approach at the New York City Department of Health, and specifically the Primary Care Information Project, which was the project that won the Maine State Aid Award. I'll tell you a little bit about our system's architecture, how we use it, and ultimately what value we believe it has to the health of New Yorkers. So starting first, for those of you who don't know a little bit about the Primary Care Information Project, we were founded by Farzad Mostashari about 7 years ago. The idea he had was one way a health department could impact population health was to think about the deployment of prevention-oriented electronic medical records coupled with workflow practice redesign at the practice level to improve population health in an environment where payment rewards disease prevention and actual health outcomes. And so we refer to this as our three-legged stool, but we have activities against each of these pillars that we believe in concert work together to fundamentally change the ecosystem in which providers practice. Being a part of the New York City Health Department, we have sort of as our guiding principle also the public health priorities of the department, and those are well elucidated to us. And in, not shockingly, you know, cardiovascular diseases, smoking, obesity, et cetera. And these are the sort of large disease burden areas that kill thousands of New Yorkers a year. Importantly, they're amenable to prevention, so we feel like we're not up against a brick wall. And that there are diseases where they're best addressed through coordination across activities, not necessarily sort of hand-to-hand combat. And so we have been deploying electronic medical records now for about late 2007, and have, for those of you who know New York really well, you'll notice we have sort of a density around, you know, South Bronx, Harlem, South Central Brooklyn. Those are what we call our district public health areas. Those are areas with the greatest health disparities in New York City, notably sort of, you know, the Upper East Side and Upper West Side areas is not where we tend to focus. We've been deploying electronic medical records across a variety of settings, and those of you who work in at the practice level, you know, you've seen one practice, you've seen one practice, and literally you've seen that practice that day. They look, you know, fundamentally different depending on who's there. So we have a lot of experience in catering to different kinds of practices. About 540 small practices, and when we say small, we're not joking, it's about 1 to 2 doc shops, 38 community health centers, and 3 hospital ambulatory care departments, totaling about 2,800 providers that care for just about 3 million patients, and we're able to see north of 400,000 encounters a month, and I'll tell you what that actually means. So let's talk about the system. So at its base, we have all these providers that are using a commercially available electronic medical record. It's eClinicalWorks. Some of them have client installs, some of them have ASP installs. But importantly, they send data to an eClinicalWorks server, which then sends data to our data warehouse, which we call the Health Quality Information Network. And to tell you a little bit about that, that's daily transmissions of syndromic data, and it's monthly transmissions of quality measure data and utilization data. And utilization data is a word that we use to describe things that we wanted to know about how providers were using the system. So it's things like how often do they e-prescribe, or how often did they use certain features and functionality of the system. Those, what we actually get in terms of the transmissions, are items that we coded into the electronic medical record many moons ago, and they're not very easy to change. Again, because of the way that this system is deployed, you know, if you had to go make a change to this, you'd need to go literally change every single installation of the EHR software. Pretty soon we realized that it was great to get this kind of information on a regular basis, particularly when we could start to trend it over time, but this didn't allow it to respond very well to any kind of new request for information. Or be able to push information back out to providers. And so we built the second half of the system architecture, which is what we refer to as the hub. And this hub allows us to query, again, in an aggregate way, no patient level data, allows us to query the electronic medical record. So we can send a job, it runs overnight, and then returns back to us the next day the counts that in response to our query. But it also allows us to push out alerts, and I'll talk to you a little bit about how that works. And again, that data also feeds into our health quality information network. And together, we stitched these views of the data to do things like the data analysis for program evaluation, and we use it to give feedback to providers. We run pay-for-performance programs off of it. We do public health monitoring, of course. And we're beginning to do a lot around data-driven resource allocation. So let's first start, I'll tell you a little bit about some of the public health functionality that is at the foundation of all of this, because that's importantly what each of those 2,800 providers sees every day as they're seeing patients. So this is a screen from eClinical Works. If you notice, about 20% of the real estate of the screen is taken up by these clinical decision support alerts, and they're designed in sort of like best practice designed for these kinds of alerts. They're actionable. So if you click on here, the smoking status needs to be updated, you click on this, it brings you automatically to the screen that allows you to document the smoking status. If you click on the one next to blood pressure control, it takes you to an order set that has evidence-based medications and allows you also to order like labs that you would normally order in somebody with hypertension. You can order referrals that would be traditional for folks who have hypertension and things like that. So they're well designed. Once you do something about them, they go away, so they're sort of like a task list. For anybody who has more questions about that, I'm happy to answer those. We also built in these order sets that I alluded to, where this is one for smoking cessation, so it drives providers to the use of evidence-based guidelines, and we can in the dosages that are appropriate, and they can we've added, skirted by the checkbox here, but FACTAQUIT is a program that New York State runs that providers can fax information about a patient with their consent to the state, and the state will call them and see if they need nicotine replacement therapy and help them out. And so we try to pool all of those into sort of one-stop shopping for providers. And importantly, this is something that we feel as a health department we would do better than, for instance, the vendor community or the pharmaceutical community or other folks who perhaps aren't free of all of the biases that we feel that we get to be untethered by. We also thought it was very important for providers to be able to see how they were doing. So many of these providers don't have any clue how well they're doing on blood pressure control or smoking cessation screening. So we built into eClinical Works the ability for each provider to see, actually across all providers in their practice, the score on any particular measure. So this one in particular is blood pressure control. They ran it annually, and obviously this is dummy data, but you're able to see how you perform vis-a-vis your peers within your own practice. And then if you doubt the data, as many people do, you can double click it, and you can actually see who are the patients that make up the numerator and the denominator. And we thought that was really important to establish physician trust of the data. And it hasn't been without its problems, but it's that kind of transparency that when I talk to a physician, I say, the world owes you this. You shouldn't have been practicing without any kind of ability to tell how well you're doing. People get performance reviews in other settings. You're a banker, you know right away whether you've made money or lost money that day. But if you're a provider, it's very hard to get to how are you doing across the health of your patient population. And you're not getting that kind of information in any kind of aggregate view from payers, and so we thought it was important that electronic medical records would provide that information. And also, we knew that we couldn't foresee all the possible questions that providers would want to ask of the data, so we thought it was important that there was a built-in registry, so essentially sort of a layer on their electronic medical records that allows them to design their own queries. It's obviously limited by sort of the fields that are easy to query. This doesn't do things like screen for free text or anything, but it would allow you to say, okay, which of my patients have uncontrolled hypertension, don't have a visit in the last 6 months, and haven't booked one in the next 3 months, because I'd like to call those patients back in for care. And so this forms the basis of something that can start to be used for population management, case management, et cetera. So it's a little bit about what the EHRs look like. On the left side, let's talk a little bit about what the quality measures look like. I want to first start off by saying that nobody should walk out of this room saying, well, the New York City Department of Health gets information about all of the patients. We do not. We get aggregate counts only. That reduces the privacy risk, obviously. It also increases stakeholder participation. No provider, I think, in their right mind would have agreed to take on an electronic medical record if we were then going to be able to suck in all of the patient data. And so we've restricted our views of the data to aggregate, summarized counts only. We make projects assign data sharing agreements. So we don't do this surreptitiously. They know that they're doing this. They sign an agreement with us, and so we it's a partnership, essentially. And we do, even though it is not PHI, we do treat it like PHI, and we just, partly because we're all sort of type A, but partly also because it's really important to design the structure of this so that it's impenetrable. You can represent back to providers that we value this data, we protect this data, not everybody can look at it. And even though it doesn't include patient information, it is very sensitive to a provider how they're doing on blood pressure control. That's not something that they want out there for the world to see, largely because what's in the EHR doesn't always accurately reflect how they're actually practicing, and we don't want anybody to misuse the data. So all the standard usual suspects in terms of how to safeguard data are deployed. So I said, you know, the project is basically they enter information into their server, which is in one third of the cases tends to be local, and another third of the two thirds of the cases is hosted by clinical work. Monthly, this data goes over to the ECW server, which then sends it via FinnMass to our server. We spit it out into HQIN. We have a series of data tables, matching, cleaning, etc. And then it's usable through staff and other more kind of front end user applications. And we spit it out in various forms, and I'll show you some of those. On the right side, remember this is the hub, so we're able to query information and we're able to send out information. And I'll give you an example. Right as we were just about done building the pilot of this, we got an HAHN alert. Now, I'm sure this didn't send trepidation down everybody's spine, but Flagyl tablets were underweighted, and we thought, well, this would be actually a good opportunity to test the system, even though this is not obviously necessarily life-threatening. It was a kind of a real-life example of how we would use the system, and so we'd only deployed it to about 8 practices to date. But we got this HAHN alert. Very quickly, we were able to build a query that said how many patients have been dosed with Flagyl in the last, I forget the time frame, say 3 months. And then we're able to see, you know, these practices, these are the number of affected patients. And so we were able to say, okay, there are patients who have been dosed recently with this Flagyl tablet and whom the provider should be notified that the dosage was underweighted. And so we were able to send those practices a message alerting them. And then importantly, you know, for any new patients that was coming in, we were able to deploy what we call a registry alert that popped up on that right side of the screen that said, you know, you just dosed this patient with Flagyl, warning, you know, click here, there's an alert that you need to be aware of, and then it sent them right up to the FDA website. So again, not like, you know, nobody's gonna win awards of this particular use case, but this is an example of how we're able to query, get the results back, decide what we do about it, and push back what we think is the most useful piece of information. And so we've been deploying, hooking up practices to this hub and have hundreds of practices now. We're also able to say, you know, when we think about our quality measures, how representative are they of the patient population of New Yorkers? How much can we use that data to inform program decisions for all New Yorkers? And so first we need to understand, well, frankly, are we looking at the population sample that's actually reflective of New Yorkers? And so we sent out multiple queries just asking for the demographics of the patients across these practices. And we were able to compare it to the U.S. Census data for New York City for the same time period. And frankly, we track pretty well. We're over-sampling women, and we're not sure if that's because we have sort of a lot of OBGYN practices in there, or primary care practices where women are more sort of healthcare thinking. But it is, you know, fairly reflective of the general population. We were also able to do things like, let's take a look at the rate of obesity by zip code and try to understand, and you know, where do we have a elevated BMI at the zip code level as a way to inform our chronic disease counterparts, the health department, about where they potentially could ramp up or ramp down some of their programming activities. So this is a very junior example on this, but this is the kind of thing that we'd like to do with it. And then also, as we kind of think about the data, as these two feeds of data come together, there's also a set of other uses of the data. So for instance, one of them is to dispel our myths or to get us to think more critically about the practices. So when Meaningful Youth came out with the goal of 40% e-prescribing, we thought, oh, this is going to be so easy for our practices. They have been live since, some of them have been live since 2007, 2008. We've been going to these practices. No problem. E-prescribing, they're done. They're already well over 40%. Well, when we ran the data, it actually wasn't the case. They were closer to 18 to 20%. And so we're not going to meet the meaningful use goal. And we realized that actually some practices who had been doing really well on their quality measures were actually doing abysmally on e-prescribing. They thought e-prescribing was e-faxing. Some of them hadn't yet put in place the workflows. And so we were living sort of deluding ourselves into thinking that our practices had been doing what we thought they were doing, but in fact they weren't. And so we put in place some programming around e-prescribing. We did a lot of communication to the practices. We reinforced them on site visits, let them know about the incentive program. Concurrently, New York State was running an e-prescribing incentive program, so we made sure to get that information out there and highlight those efforts. And I was really pleased to see that, as April, we got sort of the practices well over the 40% mark. But had we not been able to get this data, we honestly would have continued to delude ourselves into thinking that they were all doing it. We also do use this data for resource allocation. So our practices can get site visits one of two ways. They're either due for one, in which case we go out to them, or they call in. But often we find that the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and sometimes the people who need it the most don't place the inbound phone call, and for some reason we're understaffed, or we haven't gotten out there yet. And so we realized that there were gaps in how we were actually going out to practice it. And so we pulled together what's called a super user score that combines how well they're doing on various quality measures and how well they're doing on various utilization measures, like are they e-prescribing, are they checking their labs, are they documenting allergies in a structured way. And those are some sort of markers for how well people use the system. And it allows us to see sort of like people who score very poorly are due now first up for a visit. People who score really, really well and who want another visit are sort of delayed, and we don't go out to see them, right, just because they called. And so it allows us to be more thoughtful and balanced and really meet the true need as opposed to the apparent need. We also can do public health monitoring off the syndromic surveillance data. This is H1N1 data. This graph allows us to see that really H1N1 was really a sort of hotbed in the ages 5 to 11 community, as opposed to sort of adults or seniors with it. So being a mother of two myself, the critters that live in your children. but this from a health department, it allows you to programmatically respond and say, okay, children who are sick need to be kept away from elderly populations or populations at risk, and you can go out with that kind of messaging as opposed to driving everybody to their doctor's visits or things like that. So that was one example of the data. And importantly, it's not just about us. I mean, while we love the data and while we love to think about how the Department of Health can improve our programmatic activities using the data, it's also important to give providers back the data in a more helpful way. I did show you that they could get this data out of their system, but it does feel a little bit like hunting and pecking, and they have to go get it. They have to sit down and frankly have the time to do it. And then they're looking at it measure by measure by measure. And there wasn't a great way in the electronic medical record to give them sort of an overview of how they were doing. And so we give them back these dashboards monthly. And so it includes, so the way kind of a brief orientation to this is these are sort of EHR use measures. Again, this is like how many office visits they have, whether they're locking their notes, whether they're entering blood pressure in the right field. It's tracked over the last 6 months, so that's sort of the line. And then the straight line there is sort of the average across all practices. If they're blue, they're sort of doing okay. If they're red, it's a problem. And if they're green, that means that they're compliant with meaningful use. Because some of these are, while we didn't know about meaningful use at the time that we created these measures, a lot of them obviously overlapped. And so things like, whether or not they're e-prescribing is lucky for us, a measure for meaningful use. And on the right side, this is the quality measure. So this is how well you're doing in A1C, blood pressure control, cholesterol control, et cetera. And you can see, so practice is doing quite well, and all of a sudden their A1C testing tanks. We can look at that and say something's happened and go to the practice and find out this practice actually implemented an in-house A1C testing and did not Voink map it. So it's not that they're providing crappy care, but they, you know, and we can see this kind of these kind of changes and proactively work with them. And certainly many of the providers who are engaged in the data would call us and say, like, there is no way this is not right. And many times they're correct. It's not right in the sense that it's not. It's reflective of how they're documenting or some change in their practice. Mm-hmm. And so we're able to do things like that. We show them also how they, what kind of CPT codes they're billing. So for either new patients or established patients, this gives us a sense sort of on the billing side, just how well they're doing. Sometimes this one's actually, this is a pretty bad example. They really shouldn't be billing level 5 new patient visits. So we know that this practice, likely if they were to be audited, would have a problem. So we would send them out there, our billing consultants, to help them understand how to, you know, better think about the billing. And they really love the billing consultants, by the way. And it's a way for us to establish rapport with them and give them something that's very, very useful to them that allows us to kind of keep the dialogue alive on the public health side. Because not all of them would entertain our presence in their office if we didn't have that kind of an immediate value add. And then we also, I mentioned that we have a quality reporting system where we don't allow anybody else to log into the health quality information network, so no payer can come to us and say, hey, I want to reward doctors who perform better on blood pressure control, give me access. That's not how we would allow that to happen. We would say, give us your screening criteria for the program. So if you're willing to reward all providers who have, you know, I'm just going to make it up, like, blood pressure quality scores of 80%, A1C scores of 80%, over 80%, and cholesterol control scores of over 80%. Give us those criteria, that filter. We'll run the data through that filter, and we'll then come out with a list of providers that meet that criteria. We'll reach out to the providers and say, would you like us to let Aetna know that you're doing, that you passed their criteria and you qualify for their paper performance program, yes or no? And if the provider would want us to do that, then we give the information. If they don't, we don't. And we can also design sort of like reports back for providers to show them how well they're doing on that particular program. And so the reports don't have to look just like the one that I showed you a couple slides ago. In fact, this is an example of a report that we do run for a patient performance program that we administer called Healthy Hearts. And here we show providers how they're doing across aspirin, blood pressure control, cholesterol control, and smoking cessation, which is what the program is based on. We let them know so how much they've been eligible for, and then also what they would have been eligible for if they hit 100%. And lastly, in terms of the value of the system, we're still learning about all of its uses and everything that we can do to drive improvements. But importantly, we've in a sampling of 56 small practices that we did, we're publishing this information. It's coming up in the fall, showing across a variety of clinical preventive services, practices that had, once they initially adopted the electronic medical record, compared to after we turned on clinical decision support and gave them more tools and training and deployed some of the things that I've talked to you about today, almost every single one of the clinical preventive services improved in very short course of time in a very statistically significant way. And so and we know that, frankly, delivering these services saves lives. And so this is not all of the problem and all of the solution, but it certainly has, for us, has been a really good foray into opening up relationships with providers, thinking about how we use data, not only ourselves, but how we turn it back to end users internally and externally. And a lot more thought needs to be given to how else we could use this data in broader concepts, like people talk to us all the time about physician rankings and things like that. And we're certainly not ready to use the data in that form. That's not what its intended purpose is. But there might be other uses of it that come about as we think about accountable care organizations, health homes, and all of these new models of care. So that's a little bit about us, and I'm happy to take any questions. I do want to say we're throwing money at the problem, we're throwing bandwidth at the problem, we're throwing a lot of bright minds at the problem. I'm really lucky to have a wonderful staff at PCIP who work very diligently on this. And actually, John Tavernan, who's here in the audience, is one of the technical gurus on almost everything that I've mentioned here today. So any technical questions can be thrown to John. So thank you for your time.